Today on Wings, world citizen, organizer, and political analyst Maimuna Muidal shares observations from her lifelong work for democracy and gender parity.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Maimuna Muidal comes from a political family in Kenya. Her father was mayor of Mombasa and later a member of parliament. Her mother was one of four wives in their polygamous family. Maimuna was born the third child of 13. She had opportunities to learn and explore, and she took them. Among her many achievements, she co-founded and chaired the League of Muslim Women of Kenya and served on the board of Kenya's Women's Political Alliance. She is often a media source as well as a reporter. She told some of her story to Wings correspondent Diana Wanyonyi.
My name is Maimuna Muidal. I'm a gender consultant, and I'm also an analyst for Deutsche Welle Radio, which I do in Kiswahili. I normally do analysis on KTN television locally in Kenya, Voice of America sometimes. So basically my background is in political science. I'm a graduate of the University of Toronto. Spent about 7 years studying in Toronto. Then came back to the country in 1996 to my hometown Mombasa. I was born and bred and schooled in Mombasa in the lower primary and high school. After graduation, I worked in Nairobi for about a year and took another turn and worked for the Australian Embassy, where I was in charge of trade between Kenya and Australia at the embassy. Later on, I moved to join the Guy Commission when the country was going through change, constitutional change. I was the national coordinator, and I was in charge of the Coast Province, Nairobi, and Central Province. So basically, we did a lot of civic education for that period of time. We traversed the country to educate the public, and finally ended at the Bomas of Kenya, where the delegates discussed the way forward for the constitution. In the process, I became very active in politics. For the first time, because I was born in a political family, but I'd never been personally active in terms of being a candidate. So I became a candidate in 2004 after the minister for Kisauni constituency passed away. And I contested with the old party, KANU, Kenya African National Union. After that, I started working closely with various organizations. After 2017 elections, I got some work to do in Bangladesh. So we observed with the International Republican Institute. I was a long-term observer for a period of 3 months. And then again, I observed the elections in Nigeria, the gubernatorial elections, and then the national elections. Both were good experiences for me because of my background. I was able to understand the dynamics of elections in different countries and use the experiences to share with women leaders in the country. I've been a trainer for women leaders in South Sudan with the IRI and the NDI on civil society and their participation in constitution making. I worked in the north of Sudan, again on the same, during the referendum for the separation of South Sudan. So basically, my whole work experience has been focused in democracy and governance and gender issues.
Can you just give us an overview of the picture of you being in Bangladesh as one of the election observers?
Bangladesh was an eye-opener for me. What I saw was the Bengali woman is very powerful, and they came out in large numbers because there were two senior candidates vying for premiership. And they're both women. Sheikh Hasina, the current prime minister, is the daughter of the first president of Bangladesh. And the opponent was Khaleda Zia, was the wife of a general who toppled the first president. So these two women were extremely powerful, and they controlled the politics of the day. So for me, that was a new thing. I'm used to seeing very tough men around in our country. There are always two antagonist men in our country. And for the first time, I'm seeing women. And they are playing real politics. They are just women biologically, but they're just playing politics. So there was the gender aspect of it, that the women were coming out in large numbers in both sides, supporting each one of them. And men were supporting them because they belong to their parties. And there were women who actually made decisions at that highest level. So India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, I think Indonesia, you find among the Indian subcontinent, there are quite a number of strong women. So I learned in the process that anything is possible. Unlike our African countries, there are very few. I mean, Sirleaf was only one of them, and I think the Malawi president. Those are very few. But given the opportunity, anything is possible. I've just finished my master's class work on public policy, and I'm planning to do my research on policy and gender and governance issues. And basically, I'm focusing on the challenges of women leadership in Kenya.
Why did you choose that topic?
I chose the topic because I was very familiar working with the women movement. I was part of the women movement in Kenya, where we were agitating for the inclusion of women into leadership. And that is how Kenya was able to provide in the constitution the two-thirds principle, where women would get an opportunity to get representation in political leadership. Since 1963, after independence, there were very few women elected in parliament. So there was a need and there was a gap that needed to be filled to meet the international standards of the minimum 30%. So that was one of the reasons. And there are many challenges that Kenyan women have faced in terms of getting position into leadership. It was understood and accepted that it is not going to be easy for society to change immediately. So provisions such as nominated members of parliament was a step forward to get women into leadership. Identifying specific seats like the county women rep seat was also one of the mechanisms to increase the number of women into leadership. So because of that experience, I decided that that would be the best topic for me to research further on and add value to other researchers in the future. But it's also a learning curve for me to get more information as to really how this problem can be tackled.
What are some of the challenges facing women leaders in Kenya?
Majority of the challenges are society, because we are very traditional, and majority of the countries in the world are traditional. But other countries have gradually been able to implement new ideas, include women in positions. For instance, Rwanda went to war, but the leadership in Rwanda was very deliberate to make sure that change comes forward. And a very recent example I would give you is Ethiopia. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed took a bold step to include women in his cabinet, to increase the number of women representation in a very short period of time. You must understand Ethiopia too is very traditional. That is a bold step that needs to be taken, and Abiy Ahmed was able to do that, and he has surpassed quite a number of countries that were more democratic than Ethiopia. So we have lagged behind because, for obvious reasons, there's never been really a strong leadership that would take such a step, because what is remaining is just an implementation of the provision of the constitution. And maybe then we'll have change.
What is your fear?
My biggest fear is we are moving backwards instead of moving forwards. The whole country gave their views during the constitution-making process. The whole country participated. It was actually a people's process. There was no really any need to start another process. What we need is to start implementing what has been provided for in the constitution. Now, my fear is that if the referendum comes and then this issue is brought forward as a new issue, it may be thrown out. And we will have lost quite a lot, because you can hear from the discussions around that the biggest burden is this women position in terms of budgets. And that is not the truth. But because we are one of the leaders in the region that have been very pro-democracy, it may have a ripple effect in other countries in the region, especially the East African countries, because they have progressed. The other partners have already progressed and we haven't. So if Kenya goes backwards, then chances are it might have a ripple effect to the other countries.
How was your experience in Nigeria and South Sudan?
Nigeria was no different than Kenya. It's only that the elections are a bit different. But it's like being anywhere else in Africa. You feel very much at home because the cultures are more or less the same. It's only that in Nigeria, they're a bit faster. East Africans are a bit slower, conservative, but Nigerians are loud and fast. But they are aggressive when it comes to participating in elections like any other African country. Extremely aggressive. Their party politics is very strong, but they also have similar tribal issues. It may not be as paramount, but it's still there. Alignments are based on regions, on religion, on tribe, and party alliances. So it's very similar to what we have. What I found different from Bangladesh, in Bangladesh, they are predominantly Muslim. So there was very little of the religion issue there. It was more party and individual. So the party leader mattered a lot, like the way it matters in Kenya. Who's your party leader? The party becomes the person, or the person is the party. So there are a lot of similarities. Most of the countries I've worked in have a background of being British colonies. So the administrative systems are very similar. It was easy to interact. There was a lot of activities the way we have them here. Only that places like Bangladesh, the military plays a major role during elections. So they provide the security. And people are comfortable with the relationship between them and the military. Unlike Kenya, if we had the military, people will be very uncomfortable. Nigeria, the same thing. They were using a lot of the national youth to do a lot of the work. Bangladesh was using teachers as clerks. So during election day, everybody went back home to vote. All the teachers were engaged in the process. So you could see institutions taking part in elections. And National Youth Service in Nigeria was part of the whole election process as the manpower. That was something I thought was very interesting to watch.
What about women participation? Did they come out in large numbers like in Bangladesh?
Absolutely. The Bangladeshi woman, and I have a lot of respect for them, they are extremely active. They are extremely active in farming. They're extremely active in the politics. They would come out in large numbers. They were campaigning. If you live in East Africa and you see the Asian community, you'd think they are not able to come out in large numbers and do activities in public. But in Bangladesh, they're the citizen. So they were like the way we Kenyans would go out in large numbers and campaign, make a lot of noise and put posters outside and rally. That's exactly what they were doing. They didn't shy away from that. So that was really good for me to see.
On Wings, you are listening to Kenyan political analyst and organizer Maimuna Muidao, speaking in Mombasa to Wings correspondent Diana Wanyonyi.
What about South Sudan, being the latest country that is joining the East African community?
South Sudan was very unique. I traversed the northern part and then the southern part. And it was very easy to see the difference in emotions, in the way people were thinking. This was about separation, two people separating from each other, two people who have been interacted for years. So there's a lot of bitterness from the north. There was a lot of happiness in the south. So the issue of religion was also very strong. The issue of culture was strong. The north is pro-Arab, is predominantly Arab. The south is African, it's Christian. So there was that kind of animosity. However, despite all that, there was a very good understanding among people, the local people. they knew each other. They speak a language together because the majority speak Arabic. So they could communicate very well amongst themselves. So there was that political separation, but there's still a relationship had between the people. The border people, people who've lived in Khartoum were from Juba, and the ones, the Arabs who have been in Juba. I mean, people have intermarried. So there's a lot more connection than you can imagine. And I don't think had Garang been alive, probably there would have been a separation. Because the whole idea of Garang was one Sudan. So it's a huge country. It's really a huge country with a lot of potential. But unfortunately, this problem of corruption that we have, they have it too. I'm not surprised that al-Bashir has been toppled, because there was an underground meetings going on in the north since before the separation. People have been agitating quietly for fear, because they used to be beaten up, some died. But what has happened recently in Sudan, it's something that has been burning for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. However, Sudanese are very happy people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very happy people, very welcoming. Mm-hmm. I would say closely to what we are in the coast here in Mombasa. People who are friendly by nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so being in Khartoum was a very good experience. It's a feeling like being away from Africa, by the way, when you're in Khartoum. It's semi-desert. Everybody speaks Arabic. I did pick a few languages there. Everybody thought I was Sudanese because of the way I was dressing up. So you feel at home when you're there. Mm-hmm. Again, in the south, the same. When you're in the south, you're basically like back home in the tropics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody is... either lived in Uganda or they schooled in Kenya, they've lived in Nairobi, and they speak a bit of Kiswahili, Kiganda. You know, they've become a little bit more East African. Mm-hmm. And I'm not surprised why South Sudan joined the East African community. Although culturally we are very different, mm-hmm. but they do have a little bit of the Bantus in the lower equatorial region of South Sudan. Mm-hmm. There are some Bantus in that area. So it's a mixed culture. But it's a huge country with lots of potential, a lot of resources. It's evergreen. And I just loved being around the Nile. It's one beautiful place.
Can you just tell us about the 2013 award that you received?
I was recognized by International Foundation for Electoral Systems. And I was given the Democracy Award for my contribution for a decade in the women movement, empowering women. And most of the work that I had done was basically in the country here, agitating for the women position. And a lot of the other work was in these other countries, Sudan, Nigeria, Bangladesh. And my contribution was a continuous process of about a decade in the women movement, and that is how I came to be given the award. I received the award in Washington, D.C. And there were three of us, two Americans and myself. I was representing Africa.
Why are you expecting that award?
I wasn't expecting, because most of the work that I do because I'm passionate about it. So it came as a big surprise. I was pretty shocked. It took me a very, very long time to understand somebody has appreciated my contribution in society. And to me, that's the best thing anybody can do for you, to recognize that you have played a great role in empowering others. And that kept me going, because I still do it quietly. I do most of the analysis on gender issues, of course, definitely with politics included. That is something I enjoy doing. I do it irrespective of being in a region which is quite conservative, traditional. Very few women come out to participate, doing analysis or participating in public debates on national television. And I enjoy that quite a bit.
Do you think women have a potential of being leaders?
It's not just about women having potential. I mean, every human being has potential. It's just that one needs to be given the opportunity to realize that potential. As human beings, we are born with certain skills, that are innate. You know, as an individual, you sometimes you may realize it, sometimes you may not realize it. But as human beings, we are capable of anything as long as the environment is conducive. Women might find it difficult because of these other barriers, social barriers, economic barriers, you know. But otherwise, if given the opportunity, women have proven to be doctors, engineers, and everything else.
Yeah.
So I don't see why political leadership should be a problem. Whereas we have doctors already, we have surgeons already, we have engineers. We have all manner of professions, women are there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that the environment has to be conducive.
In the recent past, we've witnessed several women leaders in parliament here in Kenya being abused, either physically or verbally, by their male counterparts. What do you think about it?
I think what has happened recently, it's embarrassing. Whether in public or in private, it's not right. I don't see anybody having a right to abuse another person, whether publicly or privately, whether men or women. It's just morally wrong. And as a leader, when a leader comes out and does that, it says a lot about the country and it says a lot about the people. If the people are the ones who elected you as a leader, then they thought of you as somebody above certain standards. But you know, a leader is a reflection of society. So if you have a leader who's abusive, that's a reflection of a society that is extremely abusive. Now, I would personally say that generally, there are very, very few leaders who are as abusive. But it gives the impression that all these male leaders are as abusive. So that means the whole of our society is abusive. And it is prevalent in our country now that a man can stand up in public and abuse a woman and nothing will be done. They can go out and abuse a young girl, a young boy, rape a young girl, a young boy, or even an old woman, you know, maybe the age of 80, 90. And it becomes just a short time discussion. Nobody comes out in public and say, we must do something about this one. We cannot take it anymore. But it also tells you that society is broken. Society is broken down. You can see so many single mothers, so many young kids with kids. Something, the moral fabric of society is broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And we need as a society to go back and say, okay, let's go back to our traditional ways of doing things. What did we do when we had such problems? How did we solve them? Yeah, we may not be able to go and do such things just in the main towns. Every community has its own ways of handling situations. Maybe we need to go back and say, okay, how did we manage such crises those many years ago?
Mm-hmm.
How did the people live in peace? How did people respect each other? So to me, we need to go back. It's a big shame that a country like Kenya would be out there in public abusing women, and then you have other leaders saying, oh, we respect our women, we want to give them their position in society. And then the next day, the same woman is abused.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else is quiet, like nothing happened. It's a shame.
With all these resources, with all this exposure to different countries, including your own country, Kenya, would you run for presidential seat?
In Kenya?
Yes.
If the environment was right, I would do it. If we had a level playing field, if we had a society that can think beyond gender, if we had a society that looks at issues, I would want to debate on issues. Let me lose out on issues, but not lose out because I don't have the money or because I'm a woman or because I don't come from a bigger tribe. Because I don't come from a bigger tribe. I come from a very small coastal tribe, which is called the Shirazis. And they're mixed people. So we don't have a population even to have an MCA, let alone being a president of the country. So I know the problem would be more the tribal issue, the gender issue, and society generally. We are not debating on any issues. I would want to debate, how can I make it better? What kind of programs I would have to make Kenya a better place? If we had those kind of situations, I would contest and I would be very happy to lose at that level. you know. But at this point, the first thing people ask you is like, which tribe are you? Which region do you come from? You know? And how much money does she have? So when people start asking that, then you wonder what kind of people are you going to be discussing with? Because we have not grown out of those issues. There's absolutely nothing wrong in being with your tribe. There's absolutely nothing wrong in having a particular religion. But developing a country, you don't need that. You need somebody with ideas to come and say, this is the way I'm going to shape up this country. Mm. And somebody else can come up with another alternative idea on how they will shape up the country into the next phase of development. But if we can't have that kind of discourse, then I don't see myself trying to get into elective politics anytime in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd rather go and train some kids somewhere on how to think in a better way.
You are parting shots.
Well, let me say something. It took me a while to be myself, but I'll give credit to where I schooled. That is where I really opened up. Then my whole world opened up. The education system that I went through, from Kenya up to university, was schooling that opened up my mind. It was schooling that gave me an opportunity to think differently. So it shaped my life. And when I was at the University of Toronto, I had all the freedom to learn and to be myself and to learn from everybody else. And even the primary schools I went to, the Aga Khan schools here, I learned a lot because we, as a kid, you have the freedom, you play, you swim, and you learn in class. So that I think shaped me the way I am. And then, of course, I had a very close relationship with my dad, and I emulated him in many different ways. So I thank God for the opportunity that I had, and hopefully maybe somebody else would get such opportunity like myself. And I like sharing with a lot of young girls and boys and telling them, you know, the sky is the limit. You can be whatever you want to be if you put your mind to it and focus on it. And when you do that, also God helps you to find your path, because we have a purpose. Everybody has a purpose in life. And when you find that purpose, you're at peace with yourself and you'll have fulfilled your purpose in life. So for me, I have fulfilled quite a number of issues that I was interested in, and I'm very much at peace with myself. I'm happy with myself.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was political scientist, analyst, and organizer Maimuna Muidao, speaking to Wings correspondent Diana Wanyonyi in Mombasa, Kenya. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit our website wingsradio.org/WordPress. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose Zoom salons can be viewed at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's maternalgifteconomymovement, all one word, .org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.